This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably. With all of your online content and classes, what is the number one rule that every young comic must know?
That it's an art. I think the number one rule is you got to remember it's supposed to be fun. It's comedy. So if you start beating yourself over the head, step back from it and refocus on that. You're supposed to have fun with this. Take it seriously, but have fun with it. And I think I think probably the number one rule to remember is Picasso's rule in art. It's like you got to know the rules before you can break the rules.
Hot breath. All right. What is up? Hot breath averse. We are about to launch our live Q&A with Jerry Corley here, ladies and gentlemen. So, without further ado, welcome to Hot Breath. This is the show where you learn comedy from the pros. I am your host, comedian Joel Byers, and we have done almost 300 interviews with comedians on this show. And our guest today, our returning guest, is one of our most requested sequels. People loved his first interview with us so much. It went from an hour of us talking about his backstory into like a two-hour comedy writing masterclass. And this is going to be no different. We're actually going to be answering your questions. So if you're listening to this on the podcast or watching on YouTube later, all of this Q&A action happens only in our Facebook group. So go into the show description and join this Facebook group. If you're already a member of the Facebook group, share it with a friend. And without further ado, it is time to welcome to the Hot Breathiverse. Welcome back, the one and only Jerry the Joke Doctor Corley, everyone. Give him some love.
Yeah, thanks. Woo! Thanks, man. Don't you love this? Yeah, you hear it and...
Yeah, there's a sound effect going on right now for you. Applause sound effect. Ooh.
All right.
So, first off, just welcome back. You're like our most requested guest back. So, you really help a lot of comics.
What? Steve Hofstetter was there, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've had all the hitters on here.
Like the million views on the heckle thing. He's come up with a really cool concept.
But you are like helping, like hands-on, helping so many comics. And I can't tell you how many people here in Hot Breath have just spoken praise about you and your classes, and just you're providing a service for comedians out there that, I mean, we're trying to do as well with our daily writing club and things like that. But like you've really been able to, I just, in knowing you the little bit we have, and then the ripple effect you have that reverberates throughout comedy is just, it's a very positive thing you're doing. So I really appreciate you coming on here to share it.
Well, thanks. I love comics. Comics, we're like the last, we're the rogues, man. We're the cowboys and the cowgirls out there. And like, mm-hmm. we take that system and we want to turn it on its head. We don't want to be in the system. That's, I think, what inspires everybody to be a comic. But it's like, can be so vulnerable out there, right? And it's like, and there was, what I realized, there was like no advice, mm-hmm. you know, no really good advice coming from like the mechanics of this. Comedy is the most unexplored art form, you know? And so you have people that just basically state what some other guys said and what some other guys said before that. And everybody's like, you can't teach it. You know, you either got it or you don't. I was like, you know, that's not true. Yeah.
Yeah. There's form to everything. Just like, I mean, painting, I mean, there's a blueprint that you can follow to then make your own, but there's structure within the art form for sure.
For sure. So how do you want to do this? Should we just go into the questions or do you want to?
Yeah, I first had a selfish question and then we're going to jump into all the questions here, which we're at. I feel like we're at 50 people right now, Jerry. So this is great.
That's good, man.
Yeah, 50 people live streaming. So what I wanted to selfishly ask you is, what we do here in this Facebook group is a daily writing club where we get a random word and then we take 10 minutes to write the best joke possible. And I've been doing comedy 10 years and there's people in here who've been doing comedy 10 months or 2 months and they're just killing me on these jokes. Like, And sometimes I strike gold, and other times I'm like, I get after 10 minutes, I'm like, I'm embarrassed to post this. People are going to call me a fraud. But that's all the process as well of joke writing. Yeah, but it's a specific skill set to be able to turn a random word into a joke in 10 minutes. So if you could, for me and other people that may be struggling in the Write 10 Club, could you kind of take us through like a process of, okay, you get a random word. Like we had a word that was Mary, like M-A-R-R-Y. And then we got to write a joke in 10 minutes. Like, do you have, where, how, what's a good like checklist for us to go through to like create a joke off a word in 10 minutes?
Yeah. And I noticed on, I think it was on one of your groups that somebody posted this checklist and it was like a copy and paste from my book. It looked like it came from some other website.
And then I'm sorry.
towards me. And I was like, I was going to say, hey, bro, you got it. If somebody stole your joke, you'd freak the fuck out.
Oh, right? I'm so sorry. Yeah, that was.
No. It was okay, like, it was your group. So I didn't do anything, right? If it was, and it's there to help, but still you got to cite the source.
Wow. Okay. I didn't even
realize. I don't know if the person really knew the source. I think they got it off somebody else's. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
Who just basically copied and pasted it.
Hilarious.
But I go, yep, that's mine. That's right there. Because there were certain things in some of my descriptions that, or nowhere else, like coincidental or configurational, or there's certain things that people just don't talk about. And so I go, yeah, well, that's, yeah, all right.
Oh, I'm embarrassed. I'm sorry, buddy.
So not don't worry about it. I'm not calling you out on that. I'm just saying, right. I saw that they said it as a checklist. So here's what I would do, because that's kind of, these are the structures, but that's kind of the checklist. But if you're not familiar, if you haven't automatized, I think I just made that word up. Automatize the structure, meaning like the way you drive, right? You don't have to think about how you use your muscles to get in the car and start the car and put it in gear and drive. You just do it, which is why we kind of miss our off-ramp when we're on the phone talking to somebody and they're giving us dates and times. And all of a sudden we go, shit, I just missed my, what happened? How did I do that? Because your cognitive brain was involved in something else. You were actually driving with your unconscious mind.
Mm.
So, when you automatize the concepts, right, which comes with just regular practice, you begin to sort of go through all the possibilities. So that one word, Mary, right away, I see a double entendre, right? Could be Mary, could be Mary. It could be like a woman named Mary. It's like, you know, when I, my wife, is large breasted. When I first, saw her, she thought I was psychic because I guessed her cup size. Yeah. She walked in the room and I was like, geez. Right. I was so taken aback. I named them Mary me. So now Mary becomes the name of a person.
Uh-huh.
Also Mary, as in I named them Mary me. Mary becomes the name, you know, could be Mary, like in Get Married. So right away, I see that possibility, you know, and so I'll go through where else can I fit Mary, you know, into that. I mean, right. You're talking about relationships. So you can go in. I might do an analogy. I might, you know, getting married is like, you know, something like that. Or I might. So I'll go through analogy, cliche reformation, double entendre, incongruity, marry the name of somebody. So I'll go through some basic forms and try to find as much as I could find on that. Then I'll take facts dealing with marriage. You know, if you marry somebody, you have 50% chance you're going to, you know, 50% chance it's not going to work. I mean, if you think about that and then you say, it's like 50% of all marriages end in divorce, the rest end in death. So what's the choice, right? So now you can still get married in the joke, right? So there's different ways. Like there was, first of all, I love that Write 10. I think it's amazing because constriction enhances creativity. You know, if you think back, I don't know if you did this. We, you know, had haiku when we were in fifth and sixth grade, right? They gave us haiku. Haiku is 575. And we're like, where's it 757? I always forget.
Yeah, 575.
575.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were kids, we were like, oh, shit, I'll never be able to write anything on this. And we had to do it over the weekend. And then on Monday, kids came back and read these poems. And you're like, holy shit, that's incredible. Where did that come from? So that constriction, right? A lot of times, most comics I find run into a problem when they just feel like they have to be funny. And it's just as big amorphous goo of vague. You know, be funny at what? I don't have something specific. But if you give them something specific, now they have to tinker with just that. And so it just enhances the creativity. You find you approach it from different angles, right? So what's missing in a joke is you start with one word and then you go marry. Marry doesn't, how does that apply? Is that, you know, marry as in get married? Is it marry as in, you know, one of the techniques I use, if it a descriptor, like, I think we did this on the first podcast. I had this thing called 50 facts, right? So I have people write 50 facts about them and then bring them into class. And you take those classes and you start building their act through those 50 facts. So one of the guys wrote down on this 50 facts, lazy, just one word, wasn't even a sentence, right? So it's like, yeah, I was like, evidently, because you just wrote one fucking word. But you know, after ribbing them a little bit, the job is, how do we step this out though? Lazy, you know, top 10 reasons you know you're lazy. So just that exercise, the top 10 list, we know is the most famous late night segment during David Letterman's tenure. But then you have, before that, it was an exercise used in the Joey Bishop writer's rooms to write jokes, find punchlines. Mm-hmm. Top 10 list is a punchline generator. You can generate a bunch of punchlines on a concept, and now you have tags and toppers to work with that, right? So top 10 reasons you know you're lazy. Lazy at what? Who, what, where, why, when, and how, right? You know, so lazy at, what am I lazy at? Lazy at, I'm a lazy, what would be really embarrassing, since we know embarrassment is a major laughter trigger, right? Mm-hmm. People recognize that embarrassment. And also when you're embarrassed, makes the audience feel superior, which is another laughter trigger. So it's like, if you get up there and say, I'm lazy. Sex, that would be really embarrassing to be lazy at. So lazy lover, and you can take it from there. I'm a lazy lover. So what are, you know, what do you think of when you're lazy lover? If this is true, what else is true? What would be your favorite sex position if you were a lazy lover? Spooning, how can we accelerate that with exaggeration? You know, I'm a lazy lover. Some guys say, you know, they're really great lovers. I'm a lazy lover. You know, like my favorite position is a nap.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a crisp joke. So with like Mary, you go kind of go through those steps and you find, you know, where the associations are, you know. And I would just write sentences about, you know, being married or getting married. Would you marry me? You know, what if marry is a term we use, a pejorative we use to put down somebody playing golf, you know? You know, it's like if you make a weak shot, they're going, come on, Mary.
Mm.
You know, I don't know why that became that pejorative, but what somebody calls you Mary, it's not a good thing.
What I find is when I'm able to create a joke in that constriction, it's when I realize what the premise is. I almost have to like remind myself of like, what am I even trying to say here, first off? And then how can I make it funny? Because a lot of times I'm brainstorming for 8 minutes and then like I have like five ideas here and nothing like that's like honed in.
That's the key, right? So mm-hmm. one word is an idea. It's just the subject, or marry is not even a subject. It's marry.
Yeah.
It's like it's such a vague application of the word. So it's like, will you marry me? Do people get how else do we use that in a sentence? Marry me. Would you marry me? He's going to marry her. It's like maybe. And then, oh, there's a possible premise. Like, what would be the weird relationship? You know, this is in traditional relationships, men marry women. In, you know, Southern relationships, men marry their sister. You know, mm-hmm. that now you have a compare and contrast, but now you have a premise, somebody marrying somebody else, how you define that traditional marriage, you know, and in 2020, people marry anything. Right. So that's how we've evolved over the years. You know, who cares who you marry?
Almost like a timeline of like what marriage used to be and then what it is now as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even marriage. The word's marriage.
Oh, Mary.
So you have to kind of stay true to the syntax.
Exactly.
Of the word. And that's the challenge, right?
Yeah.
And also, once you have a sentence, like sometimes you could take the word and go, what if I pronounced it in a different way? Marie. Right. So maybe you can go French on it, you know? There was a word, I'll give you an example of like, how can we take this further? Like, take the word intricate. Right. We were discussing the right 10 with in a group, And I said, it's a really cool thing because you have a time frame, right? You have 10 minutes and you're given one word. And so the challenge is on. It really forces you to get creative now rather than getting lazy with it and letting it go, right? And then, okay, never mind. I wasn't able to do anything. But it's like 10 minutes and you sort of gamify it and people put their stuff up on, you know, on Twitter.
Yeah. And we've started doing it's funny you said embarrassment as well, because we started doing a monthly joke writing contest where people get a random emotional theme and then they get 7 days to create a new 90-second set based on that emotional theme. So, and then there's three judges that we'll judge, and then we have a finale that live streams into this group and all that. So that's like awesome. Another constriction that's more like emotion driven, which is where a lot of the best material comes from.
Right.
Awesome. Well, that's that was very helpful for me. And also the checklist. That's so funny. Because there is a tab in the Facebook group that says like it's like writing resources, and I think that checklist is number one. So we'll go and tag you in it. We'll go.
that's very funny. So yeah, I mean, if you think about it, and in a general joke, you know, one word's a little different than say a sentence or a fact, right? Because a fact usually puts it into a premise.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a fact or, you know, a statement about me, I have five kids, then I can go through that. My first checklist would be, there's three questions I ask. The line would be, is there an assumption, expectation, or image that I can shatter? That'd be number one. Number two would be, are there two dissimilar ideas converging? Right. So I have five kids. Not really. But there is an assumption there. I have five kids. And an expectation. So I have five kids, and there is an possible incongruity if I force it, if I add one later, like I have five kids because I'm only half Mormon. Then you have something like that. Right. So then you can go on from there. I have five kids from three different moms. And they go, whoop, there's the judgment right there. Did you hear that? Right. You could feel that. And then you comment on that. Right. So the question number one is there an expectation, an image, or an assumption that I can shatter? Is there a double entendre play here? Meaning, is there a second meaning of the word or an alternate comedic meaning of the word that I can play with? Or are there two dissimilar ideas converging? So once I go through those that say I wasn't able to come up with anything, I'll say, could I come up with a cliche related to this phrase, this word that I can reform? So if I looked up, I can just quickly look up cliches. Now I have like three cliches and I can try to reform those cliches. A cliche reformation is when you basically are stating a cliche and everybody knows the ending. And you change the ending because they're already thinking. It's almost like Dice Man with limericks, right? Everybody knew the ending. They're already saying the ending, right? So you create that expectation. The brain already creates that ending. You flip that ending. Whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Whatever happens in Vegas, you know, so if you give it context, whatever happens in my sister just had a baby because whatever happens in Vegas evidently comes out of your vagina.
Mm-hmm.
So that was written in a class by one of my students, Pauline Yasuda. And that joke still gets big laughs.
That's
you know,
great.
So, but you know, you these concepts you can apply. Then you can do an analogy you can drop in. Then you look for a paradox. So these are things that people laugh at that don't have punchlines. Paradoxical humor, because it causes the brain to do a little dance. You know,
that's a funny way to say it. Brain a little dance.
Well, you have to, right? You when you do paradox, it causes you to. Because a paradox is when you take something that sounds like it shouldn't be true, but you find out that it can be true. Or when you have two things that can be true but not true at the exact same time, like the word prick, right? So prick and prick, like George Carlin's joke. You realize on TV you can say you pricked your finger, but you can't say you fingered your prick. So by definition, prick and prick, those are two things that can be true but not true at the exact same time. And when you run them so close together, it's pretty much the exact same moment, you know, in the scheme of things when you're performing it. And people do that little dance. Oh shit, you're right. I never thought about it that way. So that's the dance, right? They recognize it and go, how come I never, it's right there in front of my face. That kind of thing.
Awesome. So let's jump into these all these hot brethren and sistren in here. We got a lot of, we're at 70 now, by the way. So We are.
That's cool. And the amazing thing, it's before noon on the West Coast. So
yeah,
you get comedians to jump in before noon on anything. Normally, they don't check in for funny till about, you know, one.
There's in the Right 10 Club, not to people are like, all right, get to our questions. But in the Right 10 Club, there's comics from like Australia that tune in at midnight, all the way to people in the UK. Of course, there we have a lot of Right 10ers awesome. In Canada. So I mean,
isn't
like,
that awesome?
It's
like global. People
it's
are
so fun.
In.
It really yeah, it's comics great. Connecting around the world. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I love it.
It really is.
So, okay, we're getting to your questions now, kids. And we'll try to just kind of run through them a little bit, you know, because I also want to bring on a special guest who is a big part of the reason we're here. Teaser.
Teaser. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is the first one I'm seeing here from Lee Hudson, who is actually a one of our comedians out in the UK. He said, how do you know when a bit is done?
That's a good question, because I've had bits I thought were done that evolved later. You mm-hmm. know, sometimes I'll do the, you know, when you do the bit, and sometimes an audience member will say something, and because they have a whole different, you know, life experience and different point of view, they might comment on it or tag it, and you're like, oh shit, how come I didn't think of that, old fucker, right? And you know, I'll make a joke and say thanks for that. You know, I'm gonna use that in my HBO special. You'd be in your double wide going, hey, that's my joke, which is weird because the guy's British. But the joke resolves,
huh?
Right? You can feel the resolution of a joke. It's almost like a major scale, like a song. It's like do re mi fa sol la ti do, right? So do re mi fa sol la ti. Good night, everyone. No, we need the do. The audience will sit there and go do, mm-hmm. right? So if somebody else sees something, another play that didn't get resolved in that, you know, another opportunity. Wait, what about that? You didn't resolve that part of it. And they might say that out loud and you go, oh, thanks. Never thought about that. So usually you can hear it resolve or you make your point, because every joke should have, you're coming from somewhere. What are you trying to say with that joke? Once you say it, joke's done.
Boom. I love it. Nice, nice, tight way to say that. The second one, Bob Jorgensen, he says, ooh, this is a good one. Lee's, yours was good as well. I'm just saying. Bob says, with all of your online content and classes, what is the number one rule that every young comic must know?
That it's an art. I think the number one rule is, you got to remember it's supposed to be fun. It's comedy. So if you start beating yourself over the head, step back from it and refocus on that. You're supposed to have fun with this. Take it seriously, but have fun with it. And I think I think probably the number one rule to remember is Picasso's rule in art. It's like you got to know the rules before you can break the rules. Because it's an art form, and you have to remember that the audience is always the final judge, ultimately. And they're going to tell you, because I might think, man, I got this joke. This is going to, wow, flatline. What the fuck? You know, happens rarely. But then I'll go back and analyze. I go, oh, no wonder I left out this word.
That's great. Know the rules before you break them. Michelle Van Dusen, is there an easy way to change a joke from making the audience think to making them laugh?
Every joke is unique, right? So it's hard to make a comment on that specifically without the specific joke. But yes, there are several different ways to take that joke in. And what I like to do is when people will hit me up on Twitter or something like that for some joke help, and I'll take that joke, and sometimes I'll write that joke, you know, 5 to 10 different ways and show, here, if you want to pop, try this. If you want this, try this. If you want to really ponder this, try this. And then after they think about it, you can pop it over here with a tag or a topper. Or sometimes you say the joke, you get them thinking, then you do an act out to sort of clarify what you wanted to say. And that the act out, because now they can see it in a situation. They're like, oh, shit. So when the waiter says this, it's much funnier than if you just talk it in third person.
Beautiful. This is a one from Chris Wright. Chris Wright actually just won. There was this contest, Behind the Bits contest, and he actually just won that.
Sweet.
He asks. I think he was hitting you up on Twitter today as well.
Yeah,
excited about this. Yeah. Oh, I love comedy. Oh, this community is so beautiful. So he asks, do you have any advice on how to go from a one-liner comedian to longer form bits while still keeping the quick hard punches?
Yeah, right. Great question. So one, you know, if you take a look at Brian Kiley, Brian Kiley is Conan O'Brien's head monologue writer.
Huh.
He is a mechanical, just like comedic mechanics, you know, down to the T, right? He has found a way to sort of make the flow of the material sound like it's almost a complete story. So it rolls very nicely, even though they're individual jokes. Now, the key is I think you can take a story or concept. So I'll start like one and two liners sometimes, and then it'll evolve into a story, a whole story about my relationships, my failed relationships. And then, but within the story, all of the lines, every sentence gives you an opportunity for a joke, right? Hmm. So like when I first do a joke about meeting my wife for the first time, I do a quick joke about that. That could be done. But then, like, if I say my wife, it was my wife's birthday the other day, and for her birthday, I got her a gift certificate for his and her massage. And she said, Jerry, this is a we gift, not a me gift. So I returned it and got her a gift certificate for dinner for one. And then, you know, then I can just talk more about my wife. You know, my wife and I, we've been married about 15 years. And all of this now, this theme is running along, and they could be individual jokes weaved together with tags, toppers, and act outs. And that's what makes it feel like it's now a story or a bit. You'll notice that most of the best comics, you know, even sometimes the one and two liners, they'll get up there and they'll do an act out. And an act out just shows up as an organic piece of the joke. So we don't think about it as an act out. And they'll get into an act out. You watch them on a TV set, they'll get into that act out within the first 30 seconds. And that makes the audience feel like it's a whole story. So once they see that act out, once they imagine this in a scenario you just set up with the act out, you've got them compelled. They're seeing your sitcom that you're shooting and showing them right there in front of their face by acting it out, because they have that suspension of disbelief, sort of like we have in theater. You know, we know the guy's not at a stream right now, but he's splashing his face with water that's not there. But we buy it because it's a play, and we suspend our disbelief. Same thing happens in stand up. When you do an act out, all of a sudden the audience is seeing the pictures that you're creating, and they're in your story. So it could be one joke, but done with an act out, it just really helps that joke evolve into a bit.
Yes. Yeah. And that, yeah, that's great too, to for people to understand. A lot of times these longer bits were actually smaller individual bits that evolved over time. And kind of you found themes to tie them. So they seem like it's one long story, but it was a bunch of individual jokes that just kind of organically formed into one
story.
Yeah,
man, and it's an application of the structure, right? So if you say, okay, you say the joke and you go, okay, well, if this is true, what else is true?
Mm-hmm.
And then you could tap. And so if this happened, what would that look like? There's the act out.
Ooh,
right.
Yeah.
And so then you can say, you know, who, what, where, why, when, and how, what's the contrasting perspective? What is that? Well, some people think this, I think this, and now you're evolving it even more. So you're just taking it and using your ideas and your techniques. Definitely the maxim of the five W's is one of your best assets. Who, what, where, why, when, and how. Who, what, who, me? Who else is involved? Who else would this impact? You know, who would hate this? Who would really like this? You know, who would think this was stupid? You know, that girl right there, oh, that's stupid. You know, she's, you know, this. So then how would you respond if she insulted you or he insulted you? You know, now you have a benign retaliation possibility. So that who, what, where, why, when, out, and how can really take that story and evolve it.
Mm. All right. Curtis Waltermeyer. Great. Great, Kurt. It's great to see a lot of new faces in here. So welcome, everyone, to the Hot Breathiverse. We're so happy to have you. He says, Jerry, would appreciate you taking a few moments to speak about tips you have for writing comedy for variety acts, like a magician, juggler, ventriloquist, etc.
Well, those are, yeah, I've done lots of that, you know, and you same techniques are used, right? So I had a ventriloquist in one of my workshops, and we were doing an incongruity exercise through using analogy. Sex is a lot like going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes, well, how does that work for me? I'm a ventriloquist. My act is dialogue with my dummy. And I said, tell me something more about your dummy. He said, well, my dummy, his name is, I think it was Monk and Danny. Danny was the dummy. Danny is an old fart who's, you know, blue, kind of dirty old man type of thing. So, and now you have the angle, right? So if I write a bunch of jokes, that's a lot like going to the gym. Then I can take those jokes and weave it into dialogue. You know, hey, you know, it's like, so you have the dummy and you're like, hey, good to see you. You know, good to see you. You know, I've been working out lately, you know? Oh, you have, you know? It's like, yeah, look at this forearm. He goes, wow, that's quite something. He goes, how about the other forearm? Well, haven't been working that one out. You know, it's like, cause sex is a lot like going to the gym. You know, it's like, it's usually just me, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. And now you have the dialogue of the dummy getting dirty. And now each one of those jokes, you start weaving it into the dialogue. You know, because when in sitcom, you'll often have the executive producer come in and say, hey, I need 10 jokes on balding. So we got to, because we have to punch up this dialogue right here in scene A, you know. So, and they just write a bunch of jokes and they find a way to weave them in to the conversation. So that's probably the best way to do it. Magicians, the same thing. You have to have banter. I wrote for a couple of magicians. One didn't understand comedy, and so I had to step back from that magician. She actually said to me after, she went up there and fucked up the jokes. And then after her show, I watched her show, and she go, man, she mangled each and every one of those jokes because she said it the way she wanted to say it.
Uh-huh.
There is a structure to those jokes, and if you don't know what it is, you lose the joke. So after the show, she comes up as people are filing out. She goes, those jokes weren't funny. I said, that's because you fucked them up. And then she like, what? And it was like, it reminds me of this old vaudeville thing where this producer's doing the show, he's rehearsing it, and his girlfriend goes, I want to be in the show. And he goes, okay, honey, what do you want to do? You see, he goes, I got something for you. I tell you what. What you do is I want you to sit at the wait backstage, and then when you get your cue, I want you to walk on with this bucket of red paint, and you're going to go up to the man in the hat and say, would you like your palm red? And he says, why, certainly. And then you paint his palm red. She goes, oh, I could do that. He goes, great. So opening night comes in. She's waiting in the wings. She walks out right on cue, right up to the man in the hat and says, would you like me to read your palm? She doesn't understand what the joke is. So
right.
How is she going to execute it? So, I mean, that's, you know, what happens sometimes when you work with people. They got to understand what mechanics are being used, what technique, what structure, what's the stimuli that's causing them to laugh. If you can't identify it, it's going to be hard to repeat that and do it at will. So in writing dialogue, the same things happen, but it gives you more opportunity for, like with a ventriloquist, more opportunity for benign retaliation. Somebody could say something stupid, you embarrass them, they make you look stupid, and you trade back and forth. It's almost like a conversation with you and your wife, or you and your significant other, where you each sort of put each other down, you know? And I have dialogue with my ex-wife. I did a radio show, it was on KLOS, and I didn't know this, but when I made a comment, I said, when I found out she was cheating on me with our accountant, true story. I said, I called and she never answered the phones. Finally, I get her on the phone the next day. And she's like, I said, what is everything okay? She goes, you didn't answer the phone last night. She goes, well, Bob was over and we were crunching numbers. That was her line. I'm not making that one up. That was hers. Right. And so I said, crunching. Yeah. You're doing a little division. How many times is Bob going to you? And I didn't know this, but the radio guys had her patched in. All of a sudden I hear this voice. Well, at least it does long division. You just did fractions. And I was like, oh, what a great joke. You know?
Whoa.
So now we have banter back and forth, right? Between she and I, and then I get her back and she gets me back, and the audience will pivot back and forth and love to watch that event. So you could do that with ventriloquism, right? You can do that with, I wrote for a mentalist who had to, basically he has his line. He's setting up the, you know, he's setting up the next, you know, gag. And then in his setup, you have, those are sentences that can create double entendre opportunities, reverses, three-way buildups, all kinds of techniques that are still available in those situations.
This next one's actually a few people are saying, two people are kind of asking the same thing, and then a lot of people are like, I'm curious about this as well. So this is kind of like Mitch Navarro and Trent Babb kind of asking the same thing about how to sound more conversational in delivering material.
That's a great question, because and one thing I emphasize with people in my workshops is like comedy is a conversation, right? And so we forget that comedy is a conversation. It's mostly one-sided. But when you're talking, you see your audience doing a lot of this. They acknowledge they heard or processed the setup. And that's where your timing comes from, is listening to them, making sure they're listening to you. They heard what you had to say. They kind of responded with a little, I saw that. And then you punch the punchline with it or whatever. But that is a conversation. One way to do it is to trick yourself. Like Johnny Carson used to do this. Did you guys see this? I read this in the paper in Minnesota. It's a conversation now. Ask questions. Do you guys see this? Jay Leno. Hey, did you notice this in the news today? That sort of thing, right? And so Jimmy Fallon does the same thing. So you're actually forcing yourself. Oh shit! Before I forget, I got to tell you guys. These are little kind of things to make sure you kind of trick your brain into, because we've got this image ever since we were little of what a performance is. And so when we take that stage, that's still with us, rather than getting up there and going, you know, holy shit, I haven't seen you guys in a while. You never met them in your life. You know, they're going to laugh at that idea. And, you know, but that's why at corporates, I'll always go sit down at the first table that's, you know, downstage left and have the dinner with them or whatever. And then ask them their names and play a little name game with them and talk to them about, you know, their time at the company. So that way, when I'm up on stage, I can always go to my friends and call them by name. And the audience thinks, oh, he knows these people. Oh, he's one of us right away. So they feel engaged with you. And that's a great question, because we talk about this with how people love this community. Comedy clubs, that's why people come to the shows. They don't know it. Because they love that, to feel that sense of community. The moment you bring them in and give them a purpose that's part of the show, magic. That could make the difference of the entire show. Taylor Tomlinson does this thing, which I saw her on one of her last special, I think it was, and it was brilliant. She comes in, the audience is cheering in her intro, and she's touched by the level of enthusiasm from this audience. And she goes, and you could actually hear them, they pick it up. And she goes, boy, I can't wait till my ex sees this. That line right there said, you're on my side. We're going to prove it to that asshole. Mm. And they're like, yeah, we got you. We got your back. Mm. We're going to prove it to him too. So you've now working their superior. They feel that superiority. We're going to get him.
Yeah.
You know, and they're right on board with you. And she just in that little line brought them right into this community. It is a conversation right now.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, so you may have a one-liner that's very rigid and structured, but it's like, have a little runway into that one-liner to make it a little more conversational. So instead of like having a setup punch about your wife, it's just kind of like, so I've been married for 3 years and here's the setup punch about my wife. Like almost just a little runway up to the punchline can make it more conversational.
And this is a great time to use crowd work organically, right?
Uh-huh.
So if I said, yeah. You know, yeah, I've been married to my wife for about 15 years. How many people married? You married? You married? Yeah. What's your name? You know, Bill. Okay, Bill. How long have you been married? 6 years. One more and it's over, right? Now you're building in jokes to the conversation because mm-hmm. 7 year itch. And then you say, but every name you have and information you have from that person, how long you've been married? Oh, 15 years. Hey, you and I were on the same page, right? Miserable. We say, and I'll get a female's perspective, because it's always good to have the female perspective, because I'm a man. I love to look at, you know, that's why I bought Cosmo. I subscribed to Cosmo when I was in high school, because I wanted the other team's playbook. Mm-hmm. I wanted to hear other point of view that I'm not privy to. So that opens. So it's like when in the classroom or on stage, when I include a female, I hear her perspective and I'll ask them, you know, and now each one of those gives me a joke opportunity. On top of that, now I have fodder to call back to. Right. Gotcha. You have any kids? Yeah, 3 kids. So I'll go through and somebody else has, you know, how many kids you got? 3. Oh, well, we should talk to Tim over here. He's got 3 kids. You guys should get together and fuck, you'll be the Brady Bunch. Right. And then next thing you know, we get everybody's laughing because you're making this shit up as you go and being crass about it sometimes just for frivolous. And now you can go into your material, you know. So I've been married 15 years. Let me tell you, now the one-liner or 1 and 2-liner that comes with that.
Right.
And you build off of that. But now you have a conversation. Sometimes the crowd work can be so minimal. One of my students, she did a set, got a great response. And she did the set again another night, and she goes, it didn't go as well. I did the exact same set. I said, I bet you didn't do the exact same set. And she goes, I bet you I did. I said, okay, what's the bet? Coffee. Good. All right, so I said, bring in the videos. Do you have them? She goes, yeah. She brings them in. So the first, she did virtually the same set, the same material. But in that first set that got the big response, she goes, hi, y'all. That's how she opens. And it's in LA. So people are a little, oh, wait, y'all. Oh, that's quirky. Giggle, giggle. Right? Just a little giggle. And this one guy kind of made a snort or something. And she goes, I love the way you laugh. With this big smile. And that made them laugh more. Community. Mm. Immediately. Community. Mm. She's, oh my God, I love the way you laugh. I'm taking you with me on the road.
Community.
Where you just brought them right in, man. And then I said, that's what got them. You had a conversation. You were not in your head reciting material. It doesn't take a lot. It just takes a little bit of not afraid to look at them in the eyes and engage with them. You know?
I love it. Here's one, the offstage side of comedy. This is from Greg Brown, who says, tips on growing and gaining and training the discipline to sit down and work on the things I need to work on offstage.
So when you mean, that's a little vague, like what mm-hmm. part of it? The admin part, the business part, the promoting part, or the writing part?
Yeah, he doesn't specify. It sounds like it may be specific to writing, but maybe you could also parlay it into like the actual occupational side of comedy, which isn't just writing jokes. It's booking shows. It's working on your branding. It's like all these different things. Like we romanticize, you know, like sitting down and I'm going to have a cup of coffee and write my next great bit. But it's 8 o'clock and we're like, I'll do it tomorrow. You know, like how do we get in that mindset of like, I'm doing this or else type deal?
Well, first of all, you have to start in micro gains and micro wins. Right. And there's a book called Atomic Habits, and it's about making those little micro gains. We all think, hey, I'm going to write a 15 minutes in a day. And that's not necessarily realistic. I've written in a whole new hour overnight a couple of different times and performed it the next night, still with my set list right there, because I'll tell you the story another time. I think I may have mentioned it to you, doing a fundraiser for my kids' high school club. And they said, Dad, you're going to do new material tomorrow night, right? I go, what? You know, this is free, right? I'm not doing anything. It's like, well, they want new jokes. And I said, close my door. I'll write a new act. That was my challenge to myself. It was like, you know, Joel Byers saying, write 45.
Right.
You know? So I was up all night writing a whole hour. Now I had notes and things that were scattered, and I just put this new material together, and knowing, you know, the concepts and knowing how to, like, you know, how to trigger a laugh, what structures need to be in there. It was easier, but it was a challenge to me. I didn't know if I could do it or not. And all of a sudden I had it. I go, holy shit. And then I performed it and I asked my son. I knew it went well based on the response, but I asked my son, who is 17. He's not going to lie to me. I said, what'd you think? He goes, best one yet. And I go, oh, wow. He said, it was so fresh. And I go, that's a neat challenge. I'm going to do the same thing next year. So I did the same thing that next year. But sitting down and writing, it starts with, when I first started, man, one joke was a fucking challenge, man. Mm-hmm. What do I even start? So I would then take headlines and I'd use that process of, you know, asking the questions of each line. And then once I wrote that first joke, I was like, wow. Now, Robert Orban, who was like one of the guys I was studying as a joke writer way back in the day, he said he wrote 25 jokes in the morning just to warm up. And I'm like, oh shit, I can't even write three. I suck. Right. And then I just kept pushing. Now, what helped for me was I hired coaches, right? My dad said, you know, if you're going to write for late night TV, I said, that's really an interest of mine. He said, you got to get a coach. You got to get somebody who knows what they're doing. And I go, Dad, there's no coaches in comedy. Come on. It doesn't work that way. And then my mom gave me a Writer's Digest, and the back was an advertisement, and it was from Gene Parrott to join his correspondence course. And then I wrote him, and he says, and I said, can I coach with you one-on-one? And he was like, where do you live? I said, Chatsworth. He goes, I live in Studio City. You're 20 minutes away. We can do this. And so we started meeting once a week. And then he had a colleague of his that he, when he couldn't make it, he would, you know, this guy, Bob Mills, would talk to me. And they gave me tips, encouragement. So I tried jokes and they give me pointers. So it's practice is one thing. Practice with expert feedback is a totally different thing. Because of those guys and 18 months of coaching, that's what got me to the Tonight Show. So was that coaching, that little, hey, you know, it's like, make this adjustment right here. You know, you can try this. And then I evolved from that being on stage, because none of those guys were performing on stage. I was taking some of the hypotheses that they were coming up with, trying them on stage and tweaking those based on live performance. So what I would do is I would sit down and I would map out my day. And my day is very important. An agent of mine said, if you're not doing 10 phone calls for your business, for your career, you're not doing your job. And I said, oh, thanks for that. That gave me a goal, 10 calls. This would be 10 emails, or 10 reaching out, 10 connecting with somebody on LinkedIn or trying to do something. Can I get an appointment to go in and meet a new manager? Right. I might not be ready, but I show them my video and they'll give me the feedback and they'll say, we're looking for this. And then you try to tweak it to that. And then you show them, they go, yeah. And you prove that you do the work, you know, they're going to take it. People are looking for good talent, right? They need to know that you're out there doing the work. Don't take no as a no. So I'd map out my day at this, between this hour and this hour, I am doing my avails. I am sending out emails, I'm making phone calls, and I'm mailing packages. I'm doing shit that no other comic's doing. Because what is every comic doing? They're sending out a link. Or some are even worse. Hey, Google me. Or look me up on YouTube. You're going to have a comic or you're going to have a booker do the extra work to find your video? It should be right there. And then, so I'll send them something. You know, I'll find a way to send them something. And I'll send them lunch. You know, send them lunch and a QR code, you know, while you're eating your lunch, you know, use this QR code to look at my 6 minutes.
Interesting.
And a neat little card. And I'll call the club. Finally say, well, what does Tommy like to eat for lunch? Well, he likes his Chinese place right next door. And it's like, what's his favorite? And then I'll call that place and send them the card to send over with the food, buy him lunch. And it's from Jerry Corley here. Use this to check out my video. And they're like, oh, shit, nobody does that. So that's a certain portion of the day that's dedicated just to that. Then another portion of the day is dedicated to my joke writing. And then another part of the day is dedicated to my social media or whatever. And it's hard, man. It's hard to do all of that.
Yeah.
But if you think of yourself like an enterprise, all of those things are different departments in your enterprise. And your day job is your revenue part of your business. You know, that's bringing in the revenue to help you to put food on the table and survive and keep your business moving along as you're working that startup, you know. But if you don't divide that time and put it in your date book or put it on your phone as a time reserved for this, as an appointment for yourself, then you're not going to get to it.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, and this may have been something Ted Alexandro said on here, but it's, well, one thing he said was that you'll never regret working harder, which I enjoyed, but it is also like, you're willing to structure your day around a boss you may not like, so why wouldn't you also show the same discipline to yourself and to your comedy career and structure your day around a career you actually want to pursue? So at the end of the day, a lot of people want the magic bullet, but it is like, hey, schedule it and commit to it. And the more you do that, the easier that habit becomes and the more just reflexive it becomes. That's why the Right 10 Club started in quarantine. We've been doing it over 6 months because I was like, oh man, I don't know when live shows are coming back. I need motivation to write. I was like, well, let me just start writing online and see what happens. And now it's grown into this like international online writing community. But it all started with me like, I need some sort of accountability. So every day at 10 a.m., I'm just going to write. And now it's grown into this community. But it all does start, I think, with scheduling it. And then, like you said, having coaches. Or that's kind of like a built-in accountability system. So it's not all on you. Hold yourself accountable to someone else. And I like the micro gains as well of a lot of the times we try to write that next great hour in one sitting. But sometimes it's like, hey, I wrote a setup punch. No, it's not funny. No, it really doesn't make sense. No, I'll never say it. But I sat down and I exercised the muscle of writing. And that's the victory today. Check it off. I scheduled it. I did it. And the more you do that, the easier it'll become.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Jerry Seinfeld used to have a calendar and it had, you know, he put a red X in every day that he wrote. And the idea was don't break the chain. Don't break the chain. So if you keep that habit up, it's so much easier to keep it.
Awesome. All right. So I know a few people have a few questions, but I do, I want to bring in our special guest because the reason we're here, what I've started doing here at the Hop Breathiverse, we call it, is if someone reaches out to a comic, if they book that comic, then I want to bring them on the show and actually connect with that comic directly. And we've done it a few times, and I'm so thrilled to do it with really one of our Right 10 Club OGs. He's a teacher and he'll like sneak in the Right 10 Club while at work. It's hilarious. But let's welcome to the show the one and only Bo Johnson, everyone. Let's show Bo some love here, everyone. Let's give him some love. I'm gonna do a clapping sound effect. There you go, Bo. Hey Bo, how you doing, buddy?
Awesome. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. First off, thanks for connecting with Jerry, making this happen. The timing is perfect. So thanks for all you do here in the Hop Breathiverse. And did you have any questions for Jerry, or do you just want to get a little FaceTime?
Well, definitely questions. You know, I know we have several people in the Hop Breath that are interested in getting into late night. And so I know that's been one of the big questions we do see a lot is, how do I start that process of getting into late night writing?
First of all, I think it's a daily thing, right? You find, you look at your news app or you get online, find your regular place you go for that news source. And you start to look at the headlines that kind of resonate with you that trigger an emotion. And eventually you'll be able to identify some that you know will trigger an emotion with your audience. Like, you know, I mentioned, like, if there's anything about Tom Brady, people love him or hate him. And there's going to be, you know, if there's a story about Tom Brady, people will pay attention. And they'll, now if you can then write a joke about it, they'll be more involved than if it's just the general, you know, idea. Now, it's one thing to just have relatability or recognizability, or it's something that's familiar. It's another thing that had people that are fans, because when they're fans, that's a big emotion, which is why Trump is so often used in late night. You know, we write what's in the news, and Trump by design makes sure he's in the news every single day. So who do you think we're going to be writing about? So when people get upset about you disrespecting the president, really, dude, I was on staff at Leno when they were making fun of Bill Clinton for like 12 years after Monica Lewinsky it happened, and it was still going on. So, and I wrote some of those jokes, so get over it. You know, but I think the thing is like, you got to start writing. The goal, most of these writers write 25 to 40 jokes a day. So that, you know, what you're, that threshold that's expected of you. Then once you're good at it, there are ways to reach out that are kind of built around the system. One of the things I would suggest to people is do a YouTube, you know, build up your fans. My friend Charlie, my student Charlie Behrens, he has the Manitowoc Minute. and it's a niche character. He's from like this Wisconsinite that don't you know, and he's got the he wears like a camo windbreaker, and he's up in a hat, and he just does he does local and national news, but only for about a minute and 35 seconds. It's this little quick thing. He does some relatability to Wisconsin, some local stuff, some national stuff, quick jokes, nothing really too offensive. Just, you know, always keeping his eyebrows up and, you know, keeping it absurd as opposed to negative, instead of going like this and getting, you know, judging people's ideals. So he went from when I first found out he was doing this, it was last September, October, he had 77,000 subscribers at YouTube, and he was selling out rooms of fans doing one night. He sold out Flapper's main room 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. Who sells out a comedy club 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday? Wow. Right. I was blown away. I went to go see it and then talk to him afterwards. He goes, I'm just doing what you told me to do. When I asked in class, how do we break through this? I said, get a niche character, you know, develop a social media appeal, keep it short and tight. And then people will start to identify with the character. And so, but he even, man, he's got them reminiscing about where they used to live, all that stuff. They want to come back. Now he's at, I think, 150,000 subscribers.
That's great.
On YouTube in less than a year. And now he's, you know, he's doing some other things. He's selling product. He's selling merch. And people love this character. And his jokes aren't that great. But the character is great. And so we love the jokes through the character. The jokes themselves, mechanically, you go, eh. But the character sells the jokes. So that's like a sitcom in a way. I have a feeling this guy's going to have either a special or a sitcom in the next 2 years, you know, because that character's so like likable. But if you're doing something, you're putting out really quality material every chance you get, two or three times a week. Eventually somebody's going to take notice if your numbers start and you stay consistent, your numbers really start to go up there. And, you know, if he hits 500,000, if he hits 1,000,000, he's going to get a deal. Right. So that's one way. That's outside the system. Mm-hmm. The other way is when you're getting good and you see you're writing 20 to 40 jokes consistently, usually 25 to 40, and you're putting out good content, you're running by your friends are saying, hey, man, that's some really good stuff. I would listen to you, but you got to make sure you're getting good advice. Then one of the things to do is to follow the credit crawl on what shows you're targeting. And maybe think about targeting two or three and follow the credit call. In the credit call, you're going to see a title called supervising writer. That supervising writer is usually the head writer. Then you'll find it. You can look at the bottom of the credit call and say, oh, it's filmed over at CBS or, you know, most of them are in New York. Call the production office of that show. And even if you just call the main lot and you say, I'm looking for Conan, or I'm looking for Kimmel, or I'm looking for both these are in LA. I'm looking for Stephen Colbert's show. Then they say, well, put you right through. And all of a sudden you get this phone call, production. Then you just say the name of the person who is William Dadfrey. Hey, Bill Dadfrey. Yes, speaking. Hi, Jerry Corley. You've never heard of me. But, you know, I'm a writer, and could you take a moment and share with me what specifically you look for in a submission package? And then they're like, if I'm a writer and somebody called me, I go, dude's doing what he's supposed to be doing. That's cool. Kudos to him. And I would take a moment, but if I was in a super hurry, I'd say, hey, can we do this another time? I'm slammed. And I'd call back 30 times till he picked up the phone again, you know, and... But it's polite persistence, polite persistence, polite persistence. Never take no as a no. Never take a hang up as anything but, hey, we're busy. If you stay persistent, you will get better and you'll break down that door. There were 8 people that quit. There were 8 jobs that became available in late night TV just during this last 6 months. Mm. That's a huge number. People deciding, you know what, they're now a good time to retire or retire early or move on or do whatever their motivation. Anytime something happens like that, that's opportunity, right? So if you stay persistent and you keep writing as if you have a job. Your job is to get the job. Your job is to have material ready for the pitch that's not even happening right now, but it will. It'll be that opportunity where somebody says, hey, send me a packet, or I would just send in packets randomly and find some creative way of doing it, you know? So it takes note. This guy's, you know, like, for example, if I was bugging the head writer and I already got a packet written, all I have to do now is tweak it to what specifics they gave you, they gave me. And it's just a little tweak. And they say, yeah, well, I look for this, 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 and this. And if it was in LA, I would get on my Word and tweak it, then print it out, put it in an envelope, call a messenger, have the messenger deliver it right over to the production office that day. Like 3 hours later, he gets a packet from me. He'll go, holy shit, who is this dude? You know, that's impressive. So that's another way. Now, not everybody has that opportunity. You can overnight it or something. Do something different, but you got to stay consistent. That's it's a challenging level to be. You're working with a lot of guys who are good at this, or a lot of guys and gals who are good at this, but they're always looking for new talent. If I'm a head writer, my job is to make sure my host has the best material, make sure I've got the staff with the most creative writers that come up with good content. If they're not producing, I give them a little kick in the butt. If they don't work, if they are still not producing like I need them to produce, then they're probably going to be let go. And then, so I'm always looking for somebody good. If you're consistently sending material, this guy's got great shit and he writes so, you know, prolifically, and he's always got some stuff coming in, that opportunity may arise. And you also find different ways to get their attention. One of my students, she goes to the seminars at the Television Academy of Arts and Sciences. They have these seminars and often have, like, Conan will speak or Colbert will speak, and she'll go to them. And she's in a wheelchair. She just rolls right up there and says, hi, you know, and introduces herself, gets a picture with them, tries to give them a tape, and talks to them about how you get on the show as a comedian. She's breaking the rules, man, and meeting people and handing them packets. So it's just a matter of find out where they're making personal appearances. Mm-hmm. You know, I had my friend Lou Majelowitz from Vegas, a comedian. He was in one of my workshops. He goes, how do I do that? I go, you got Leno, because shows right up here at Caesars every Friday night. So why don't you go down there, have a packet ready with a bunch of monologue jokes, and go to the stage, find out where the stage door is, go to the stage manager and see if he can deliver it to Leno. And waiting out in front of the stage door was Bobby Slayton. He sees this packet, this comedian looking dude walking up with a packet. He goes, you got a packet of jokes for Jay, don't you? Mm-hmm. And he goes, yeah. He goes, I'm on his plane with him. I'll hand him to him personally. And he did. And 2 months later, Lou gets a call from Leno, you know, and then he said, what do you want? Do you want to be a comic? Or do you want to be a writer? He goes, I want to be a comic. Well, I can't use you then. I said, dude, what you want the job, right? You said, I want to be like you, Jay. I want to do both.
Mm.
You know, and then you say to him, I'm not getting off this. If you're on the phone with a decision maker, you say, you know, my job right now is not to get off this phone until I have a job writing for you. Right. You know, that's the purpose right now. And so they'll laugh at that because nobody asks for the job.
Yeah.
They expect somebody to just hand it to them. Mm-hmm. Polite persistence.
Yeah. So when you're in this writing room with other late night writers, are there certain news sources you go to look for stories? Are they all on up for grabs? What is the process you would normally go through?
Well, I have my typical process is to, I used to go like Yahoo was the thing. It always had nicely written headlines. And now it's all changed because you'll see CNN and every one of the major outlets, except for Reuters and AP, every one of those guys are writing clickbait headlines because they're trying to heighten your curiosity, get you to click the story. And so when you get into that story, you've got to look at the first couple of paragraphs to find the actual headline, to find the joke, what the story is about. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I think comedians make a big mistake. They sort of just reprint the headline, and that's not how somebody talks. A host would never say something like you say a headline like that. They basically, hey, did you guys hear about this? Like it's a conversation. And now you have the setup. So my sources are mostly sometimes CNN, New York Times. I go to like aggregate sources, refdesk.com will often have so many different sources on there. News.google.com also has so many different sources. If I find a story I like, I can click, you know, you know, a deeper search, which says review all, it'll show all these news sources that are writing the same story. And some of them will actually write the headline that you need. And you go, oh, that's exactly what I'm looking for right there. It's already written because it's coming from a different source. Remember, most of these people are copywriters. So they're taking the main story coming from AP Wire or Reuters, and they're rewriting it for their, you know, their rag, their online source. Also, I would go to like local news channels. Like, you know, here we have KTLA Morning News or KTLA Channel 5 News. I'd click them because now you're listening to people say it the way it's spoken rather than the way it's written. And a lot of times listening to CNN in the morning or something when I first started, I'd listen to somebody say the line. And sometimes the joke is right there. Like Oahu, Hawaii today lost power to the entire island. And that's already a setup, you know? And it's like, and then what she did, she almost wrote the joke. She goes, traffic lights were out, court buildings were shut down, and about 100,000 kids stayed home from school today. Now I know once she says those two, three ideas, I can eliminate one and just do a three-way buildup. She already wrote the joke for me, you know? Oahu, Hawaii lost power to the entire island. Traffic lights were out. Court buildings were shut down. And a vacationing Don King was seen with flat hair. So because there's no electricity. Now you have a joke that's suitable for The Tonight Show. It's not great for stand-up. I wouldn't do it in stand-up club. I'd do it for The Tonight Show because that's a different little late show audiences are a little different, you know? So that's kind of how I would do it. And I, you know, I still have a process. I still sit down and write jokes every day, you know, on current events.
Speaking of writing jokes every day, I know a few of our newer comics who just got into this struggle with that idea of what do I write about? My life, nothing about my life is funny, but so what do I write about? Mm. And earlier you referenced to one of your students, you gave him 50 questions. Not going through all 50 of them, but what are like maybe like five ideas that they could, questions they could answer to themselves, ask themselves, if that could get them started with writing?
Yeah, that's a great one. It's like, what is your relationship status? Because it's primal, right? Those are the things that we deal with. We deal with things that are primal: sex, procreation, survival, money, struggle with money, shelter, food. I like to talk about things that actually prompt the brain to produce serotonin. Like the Food Network has figured it out, right? They just show you this food. And they're like, and plus they gamified it and added a competition with a countdown clock. What the fuck else can they do to create drama, right? And we're like, and we see the food and our mouth waters and our brains are releasing this serotonin. We're like, oh man, I gotta, you know, let's watch the Food Network again. You know, I cook so much more now since watching those shows. But what you can do is like, you know, that's another subject we can talk about. That's the Food Network. It's an experience I have, and people can relate to that because it's, all of that's relatable. A lot of people go to porn because there's shock value there. I would take what everybody else is doing and go the other direction. Mm. You know, it's okay to drop something in one time as a reference, you know. It's like, oh, somebody's been watching a lot of porn. If it's in the moment, that's fine. But don't, I would go, you know, you see, you know, smoking weed. You know, you can just pretty much rattle off what everybody's talking about. Go the other direction. And find the nuances in life and those little things. And it's like when Joel gives you that one word, maybe something you would have never written on before, but now you're forced to. So it's like, what are people talking about? Let me go to some of this minutia in life that is, people see it, but they don't talk about it. Yeah, like you ever watch somebody wait for the bus? And you sort of step out. Now, where's the incongruity? Where's the paradox? Where's the irony in that them waiting for the bus? They wait on a bus. They're on the curb that's 7 inches high. They look for a bus that's 16 feet tall. I know I've measured. And they're waiting for the bus. They don't see the bus. So they step down off the curb into the street, losing 7 inches. Then they raise up a couple of inches. Lost a total of 5 inches of perspective. If you can't see the bus from up there, you're not going to be able to see it from down there. So now you have the irony of stepping off the curb to look for the bus built into that story. And, you know, people laugh at the irony. Also, that's silly. Why would he do that? Superiority. We feel superior to that person. And so that'll get the audience and, you know, recognition, observation, and coincidence. Oh my God, I see that all the time. How come I never thought about it that way? So those little nuances sometimes produce the material, but then you say, how can I put it? So what will make it funny? Irony will make it funny. Hypocrisy will make it funny, because usually hypocrisy contains some level of irony. Paradox will make it funny. Incongruity, you know, would make it funny. If you have a reverse shattering assumption, that would make it funny. You know, it's like, you know, you're talking about the person waiting for the bus. It's like, you know, then they go out in the street, they raise up on their toes, which is weird because they're in a wheelchair. That could make it funny. So you see what I'm saying? There's like, if you know the techniques which come from practicing those one and two liners, even if that's not your thing, man. My thing when I'm up on stage is not one and two liners. I'm doing stories. I'm doing experiences. I'm talking about, you know, things that happened to me and how I encountered an obstacle on my way to a goal. I'm not like, two guys walk into a bar. But it's writing those one and two liners that get me that proficiency to be able to take, just write a story, then come back through and go joke here, joke there, joke there, joke there. Okay, riff off on that, go off in this direction, come back to the story. You know, all of that now is possible because I can see that in the material because of the, you know, there's 13 comedy structures to work from, plus other, you know, cliche reformations and analogies and that are instant, you know, built-in tools to punch up a script, you know, to punch up a story. You know, you need look at Bill Burr. His whole act is driven through is-likes. Is-like, 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 is-like. And all he's doing is putting these two similar ideas together, boom, punching it up, hitting some imagery, moving on with his story with a very strong emotional commitment to his point of view, which is, you know, it made him, you know, the famous Bill Burr is today. But he uses a lot of is-like to get there. But you got to keep in mind, Bill Burr, the first 5 to 7 years of his career, he was doing one and two liners because he had to know how to write a joke. And now in his stories, it's easier to get to that joke because of that experience of writing jokes. Even, you know, it's like your scales. If you're playing guitar, playing piano, you don't know your scales, it's going to be really hard for you to do studio work, you know? So it's learning the fundamentals. You know, as comics, we want to get there so quickly. We want to get to the show and we want to get to the, you know, people get up there, but you get a comic up there, the moment they say, what else? I tune out. What else? What else? What else? What else? You didn't do your homework, bro. You know, that's what else. You know, you gotta do your homework. I'm old school that way. It's like, if these guys are paying for these seats, I better be prepared to bring them a show. Otherwise, I'm disrespecting them. You know, and you're there to give them a gift. Without them, we're nothing. Well, fuck them now. We got Zoom. You can just see how unfulfilling that is for some people, right? It's like, there's nobody watching. What do? I need that accolade.
Do you think those are still worth it, the Zoom shows?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because they teach you another level. They teach you to relate to this thing right there. Right? And it's like, that's unusual. But how does that impact you now? If you get an agent, you start doing commercials. And now you have no problem talking to the camera like I'm talking to you guys right now. I'm looking in your eyes. Right? But it's so weird because in comedy, we don't look in everybody's eyes at the exact same time. So it's a little different, but you can actually use it and ponder and do that sort of thing. You can use your framing to go, you know, it's like, and I can't do this. And, you know, it's like, I can't do anything because I'm Jewish. I can't, you know, I can't watch Stranger Things on the Sabbath. I can't do this. And it's like, I can't covet my neighbor's wife and she's hot, you know, always coming over. What, another cup of sugar? So you can do that and use the frame to create the joke. Mm-hmm. So if you're imagining what they're seeing in the frame, you could utilize that to your advantage and it forces you to be more creative now. So, but you see how that you're seeing it in a different perspective too. Now they could see your eyes. Now you could do facials. Now you can do things with your eyebrows that maybe you didn't do before, right? You know, you used to do a true and false quiz in class. You know, my friend and I would send signals. He'd study one night. I'd study the next night. We'd split the work in half. Next day, he'd be looking at the question. He'd go, all right, that one's true. He'd send the signals. That one's false. He has no idea. You know, so now you could do that where they wouldn't be able to see you up on a stage from the back of the room. So there's those advantages. Also, watch John Oliver. Watch how he, when he first started after the pandemic, doing the shows sort of remotely, and how it evolved. And he's just like, wow, he doesn't even stop for the laugh. It's just, it happens by accident. And it's so riveting. That's why he won another Emmy, you know, because that's something to take from. If you see, if you join these Zoom shows, see what other people are doing, steal the moves that are working. If they, oh, that guy gave a look like that, that seemed to really get a laugh. Oh, I can use facial expressions. Mm. I can do a deadpan. I go, you know, and she wants me to come over. Get into, use that camera to your effect. Shift a dynamic level in your act. You know, it's like, you know, and this is all going on, of course, during the pandemic, you know, or during the apocalypse, you know, and that gives it a conspiratorial type of thing. You know, use that camera as you're leaning in and trying to whisper to them. So that's a this Zoom thing provides other creative opportunities. You know, all crisis leads to some sort of opportunity.
I love that.
And did that answer your question, man? Hey, Bo, are you in class right now?
I was about to ask.
Break from class to be here?
Yeah, actually, I'm in my storage room for the school I'm in, hiding from my principal. Yeah.
How long have you been doing comedy, Bo?
2 years.
2 years. Awesome. Yes. And what made you want to get Jerry back on?
Actually, I took, I think it was late last year, I took Jerry's, he had a one-day class session on a Saturday, and so I took that, and then I watched the master class that you did with him, and I remember him saying that even if you took like Steve Martin's master class, he's referencing Jerry. Mm. And
yeah,
so
a
so
bunch
many...
of my kids said that. They said, hey, mm-hmm. what do you think of the Steve Martin master class? I go, he's a living legend, take it. And it's $99, man, to hear from a living legend. You've got to get something, some value out of that. And then a bunch of them started calling me saying, He's sending us to, when it comes to writing, he's sending us to your website for your 13 comedy structures. What the fuck?
Wow.
Well, see, and I
Steve
remember
Steve Martin's
like,
referencing me. How cool is that?
So cool.
Right. And we have so many students in Joel's classes and during the Q&A sessions asking the big questions of like late night comedy and where do I get started? How do I get started? And I always go back to having read Jerry's book also. Jerry's got the answers for a lot of this stuff, so let's try to get him back on this show. That way those Q&As, and actually all the questions I've asked are actually questions that other people have asked. Mm-hmm. I know I've asked Joel in the Q&As, and so I'm just asking their questions.
Yeah, man, this that's what I never thought I would write for late night TV. I wanted to just be a stand-up. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted to find a way to work when I wasn't working as an actor. And that was a performance thing. And I found this little ad that said, take a stand-up class. I took the stand-up class. And then I found out there were tools. So my thing as a kid, I always took apart my toys to see how they worked. And so, you know, when the teacher was like, sometimes you just got to be funny. And one teacher I studied with, I won't mention the name because it would be indiscreet, Judy Carter. But she, and I'm kidding, I have all respect for all teachers that are out there. And I do that in fun and in games. So if they take offense to that, they shouldn't be in comedy. But she said, well, sometimes you have to coax your audience. And sometimes, like when I do a joke, I'll do this. And I was like, wow, hello. If you do that, you got to reevaluate your punchline. Right. So because you shouldn't have to go, ta-da, you know, that's not comedy. That's magic. Right. So but what I saw, and so I got some value out of that. Every class gave me a little bit of different value. Right. So my first teacher was Greg Dean. I got some value out of that. But I said, there are some mechanics here. But what makes that brain trigger the laugh? What mm-hmm. what stimuli is there? There are guys that get up there and just, you know, talk forever and nothing happens. Why? What was there? And then I collected like every video I could record, and I'd go through each one and say, why did they laugh? Why did they laugh? Why did they laugh? Then I found Melvin Helitzer's book, Comedy Writing Secrets, and he sort of started to label some of the stuff, and I go, aha, that's what I'm looking for. And I built off of his labeling, and then I was taking it on the road. Then I met Gene Parrott, and then Bob Mills, and they helped tweak some more of what I was doing. And then I experimented more on the road. I was on the road 43 weeks out of the year for like 25 years, you know? So I was able to get up every night and try shit and test the shit in a theory and have notebooks filled with just like, you know, constant, like, what if I did this? What if now, what are they laughing at? So then I said, what would I call that? Well, so-and-so calls it this. So I'm going to try to keep this more of a unified sort of language so that this terminology can be reused and people like callback. I love that, that people are now, they know what a callback is. And it's like act out. We know what that is. So three-way buildup or triple, we know what that is. And so now, you know, people start to learn incongruity, compare and contrast and benign retaliation and all this stuff. They can now sort of create sort of a theory that's similar to music theory. And just like in music theory, you got to know the rules before you can break those rules. Mm-hmm. So, but if people sit there and they sit down and write every day for late night, it's a different format. It's a little more fickle. You're writing for somebody else. It's a host. Some hosts will say some jokes. Other hosts won't say other jokes. Like if I submitted a joke to Dave Letterman that talked about butt fucking, I wouldn't get the job, you know? But Leno might do it because it's naughty, you know? And it doesn't say butt fucking, but he would say something that related to that, but it's still that joke. And Letterman was just like so against that. He wouldn't do some of the jokes that Leno did about Monica Lewinsky and the, you know, the stain on the blue dress. That wasn't Letterman's thing. So you got to know your show too. That's why when I do the late night class, the late night class that I teach live, by the way, it's coming up, I think October 1st. We do it every week. You have assignments, we have goals, we review the jokes. And you get more tidbits. That's why people have like repeated the class because they get better and better. Some of these cats, man, they came in and they were mediocre. Stellar joke. One, you know, doesn't work. But then they fix it. And now they're getting so good at that. So you can actually see their improvement as they progress through this. And some of these guys say, I keep submitting. I got a couple of calls, but I didn't get the job yet, but that's why I'm going to keep taking the class because it keeps me accountable. Yep. And it's worth the investment, if you will, for your career, because it is going to get you to the job. I mean, remember I was coaching with these guys once a week for 18 months back in 88, paying them $125 a class. I charge that for one-on-ones now. And, I got a second job to fund that. But after that investment of what, $12,000, whatever it was, I made that easily back in the first, you know, few months with my job. And now that job also gave me a credential and a status. Now I could walk into the Improv or the Comedy Store. Oh, he writes for the Tonight Show. Hey, you want a spot? No waiting in line anymore. So it's just that it's how the business works. You're that little extra piece of legitimacy, maybe, you know, that says, hey, this guy, hey, we got a writer from the Tonight Show here tonight, that gives their club more legitimacy. So that's why that was so valuable for me. And now, and to get, when I started writing screenplays, oh, you wrote for the Tonight Show for 8 years? Yeah, come on, why don't we have a meeting? When before knocking on that door, getting that meeting would have been tougher, but now I get the meeting. Because now that we wrote the film got made. Now I'm getting meetings all the time and selling scripts. Some of them, none of them have been made yet, but I'm getting there. One of my students just got a film made that Kelsey Grammer's in and John Cleese. They're shooting in the UK starting this week. So that's so exciting. He was like one of my students and now he's got a film, you know? That's amazing. It's so exciting to see that, man. And then they send you a card with a bottle maker's mark or something. They say, thanks for my career.
That's so cool.
It's just like, there's no money that can replace that, you know?
Well, Bo, do you have any, I went over time with Jerry again. I know our last one turned into a 2-hour thing. Bo, do you have any closing questions before we let Jerry get back to the golf course?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I got to go back to the doctor. She gave me this medicine that's turning me like red. Have you noticed that? How red I got? Yeah. I just looked at myself. I go, what is that? That's got to be that photo. Maybe that's photosensitive, the medicine that I got.
Oh, weird.
Look how red I got. That's like I got a sunburn from the screen of the computer. It's amazing.
You look great, buddy. You're beautiful, Jerry. And this was super helpful. A lot of people are making comments about how helpful this was, and thanks for doing it and all that jazz. And Bo, you know, I mean, thanks for putting us together, man. You know, reached out to Jerry. You totally scheduled the day and the time, because Jerry and I tried to do this several months ago, and scheduling and coordinate, like, it's hosting a podcast and interviewing people. There's so many layers to it. So I'm glad that it happened now, where it's a member of the community taking action and making things happen. So, Bo, thank you. I know Chris Grulon has done this as well.
Thank you, Jerry.
So, thank you, Jerry, as well, for doing this.
No, my pleasure, man. When we did this the first time, I thought it was like, when I saw your seminar on the podcasting, I go, this guy really cares. He gives a shit.
Yeah.
He really likes this. He likes to help.
I know
that's me too. And it's like, I loved it. People say, don't just tell me you're doing this because you love to help. I go, that's how it started. I really wasn't making any money. I was just helping people. You know, I'd be on the road and bookers would put people on the road that were new and needed, that had promise and needed sort of some guidance. And I would take them out there and show them and help them tweak jokes and, you know, give them some suggestions to get better. Always with positivity, positivity. You know, you hit them with positivity and then show where the weakness is. And so, because getting up there by yourself with no fourth wall, not hiding in a character, just you, it's super vulnerable. So if you take them down first, you're now working in a deficit rather than saying, you know what, you're spontaneous. Jokes aren't there, but they're spontaneous. Now let's figure out how to get there. And like this joke, you can do this. And this joke, you can do this. Now it's a matter of keeping it spontaneous, because that's your craft. Your craft is taking the words that are on the page and making it sound like they're just off the top of your head. That's craft, right? So that's what comedians don't understand. It's like, if you write it, it's not funny anymore. You're not using the part of your brain we use to talk. Writing and talking are two totally different things. So once you write it, now you have a record of it. You can, you can refer to it again, and then you can also tweak it. Soon you'll start thinking and writing the way you speak, and to make that easier. But now taking it up there and getting up there and making it sound like it's right off the top of your head, that's your craft, and that takes practice.
Mm-hmm.
So and these Zoom things help, because this is a different format. How do we still stay conversational in this talking to a camera sort of thing?
Yeah,
you know,
it's true. And yeah, people are turning in from India. They said this was worth staying up late for, all the way from India. That's awesome.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. And that's one of the core values of Hot Breath, is it's positivity, community, and productivity. So it's like, we're willing to work hard and also support each other in that, all with a positive attitude. So
and synergy, man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Bo, do you have anything you'd like to promote before we let Jerry land this plane?
No, nothing at the moment. So.
Twitter, do you have, so you want people to follow you or anything?
Oh yeah, I mean, I do. I am on Twitter. Sorry,
no, you're great, buddy.
I just got a message too at the same time when you asked that. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at B Johnson Comedy.
Beautiful.
Nice.
And Jerry, yeah, please let people know, because I use you as like a resource. Like if someone asks me a question, I'm like, I can tell you my experience. This guy not only has more experience, he has several different resources, free and paid, that you can use. So
I
constantly refer people to you. So please let them know where these a la carte things you're doing are great. So, I know a lot of Hot Breath fans have done it.
Hit me up on Twitter at Joke Doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, and if you're not on Twitter, you can go to visit me on Facebook. And I think it's also at Joke Doctor, at, you know, it's facebook.com/standupcomedyclinic. Hence the Joke Doctor thing. And that was a name that was given to me by, you know, veterans at the Friars Club when we would have these little writer sessions, and I would tweak their jokes or fix their jokes. And they're like, you're like, you fix jokes, you make them well. You're like the Joke Doctor. And that stuck, you know? And I was like, oh, that's such a neat little thing, because I'm the new guy and these guys been around for a long time, but they just sort of, you know, they wrote with hope all their lives. And then if a joke was funny, they kept it. If it wasn't, they dropped it. But there were jokes that they didn't think they were going to drop. And I go, you're just missing a connector. And then we'd put it in, the joke worked. And they're like, how did you do that? You know, it's just a lot of practice, I think, is how that comes about. And really studying, really getting there, studying the mechanics, rather than just believing you either got it or you don't, you know?
Yep. I think that's the big overall takeaway today is, well, learn the rules before you break them, But like, yeah, learn the mechanics, work hard at those mechanics to learn them and make them a reflex, and then like make them your own. But it all comes down to work, being willing mm-hmm. to put in the work, period. So thank you. You've helped so many different, what they're saying from Germany here, all across the world. Thank you so much, Jerry. Hop Breathiverse. All of the links that he said, that Jerry said and that Bo said will be in the show notes. If you want to get involved in future Q&As like this, you've got to be involved in our Facebook group. You're watching on YouTube, you're listening to the podcast, join the Facebook group, get involved in the Right 10 Club. And we'll be back with another Q&A soon. Thank you so much, Jerry. And Bo, thanks for putting this together, buddy.
Thank you. Bo, thanks for putting that together. And your principal just called me. So do you know where Bo is?
actually, she just called me. So,
all right. Well,
I declined her.
Well, you go answer that. That's your job for now, buddy, until we make comedy your job. And
that's right.
Have a good day, guys.
Right. Thank you so
thanks
much.
Thanks for having me,
Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.